we're back. We got a couple clients that we've had. They can introduce themselves.
I'm Mike Van Bortel from Shortsville, New York.
I'm Tom Baker from Palmyra, New York.
So, you guys, do you think we had a good week? Like, honestly, like the amount of elk?
Great week.
Absolutely great week.
I know that anything would be good from the deal that you had last time, so it was not a very good hunt.
Yeah, the very first time I came was terrible.
Did you even know elk were here?
Yes. I knew elk were here, but I had a guide that couldn't climb a mountain to go get an elk.
Yeah,
so that did not happen here at all, period. It was 100% better from the jump.
So that'll just give you a little bit of understanding of what he's coming from before. We're going to tell some good hunting stories, and then you can tell the horror of last time, and you can kind of give you your perspective on, because this is your first time elk hunting.
This is my first time elk hunting, yeah.
First time west?
That's never right. Been past Chicago.
Never been past Chicago. So it was a good trip out overall, and you guys have great amenities here and felt like home.
So what was your expectations? We'll go with you first on like a week of elk hunting.
A week of elk hunting for me was really to see a lot of the countryside and to learn about the elk, how to hunt them. You know, you watch a lot of the television shows and it shows you one perspective, but then you get out here and it's a completely different perspective.
But how much of your mind went to like thinking of animals just eating in grass and us setting up in this beautiful timber and calling them into this giant yellow pines?
That was my first perspective.
Yep.
From the television shows and everything that you see with your eyes through the, you know, the internet.
Now, our animals not being complete Rocky Mountain elk, that changes a complete dynamic of it. They're more of a, they like to browse, things like that. And that's hard to comprehend that an animal that big is just living in brush, like nasty stuff.
Thick.
And rocks. Like, you're like, where's the sheep? you can say, where's the sheep
where's
at?
Where's the sheep? Yeah, it's rocky terrain. You don't think an elk can hop around and be graceful in that stuff.
Yeah, the first day when I'm making fun of all that stuff, you're like, probably like, oh my goodness, this guy's probably an idiot too. Like, oh, you can be honest.
No, like, I wasn't like an idiot. I was trying to like understand the process. It's a completely different
process. It's like a smoke and mirrors. Like what I think people want to hide the fact of how hard the animal is to hunt.
I agree. Yeah.
Like, there is nothing harder to hunt.
So I can't wrap my brain around, and I've sat and thought about it, like why outfitters and why even the media, anybody would want to make it sound easier than what it is, because, and then there are a lot of one and doneers. I can't wrap my brain around it.
The bigger problem, in my opinion, for that is once somebody comes here,
mm-hmm,
and they figure out that the terrain is not your regular old everyday trail that you're going to go on, for one, and two, how much harder it is to actually find an animal. Like, that's why you want to go to an outfitter, but that's all hidden everywhere. So once they get here, like you're saying, you get a one and done. That would blow anybody's mind that isn't expecting the rigors of what you have to do.
Did you guys have that perspective? It was going to be like more of a turkey calling in hunt.
Yeah. For an Easterner that's never, you know, been to the west side of Chicago, I was anticipating the elk were going to be more vast and available. And when we got into these big mountains, from an Eastern's perspective, I would think, okay, we walk in a mile or two, set up and start calling like a turkey, check to see where they're at, and then make adjustments like that. And that's not the case here. You got to blaze trails, you got to climb elevation, and without an outfitter knowing where those animals are going to be, us Eastern guys would just, you know, completely
be a month trying to find them.
Even sign, there's plenty of sign out there, but if you don't know, you know, their beds,
yeah,
there's likely the success rate would be down to less
than 1%. Tom said to me one time, he goes, I can't believe we're blowing through all this country. We went,
yeah,
like 3 hours. We didn't even call. But yeah, you can't do it that way. Like, yeah, it's not.
It feels like you're destroying virgin ground when you're walking so far.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of counterproductive to whitetail hunting.
Yes, 100%, because the less scent that you're putting out there,
right.
Which with elk also, they're very clever on coming across your boot tracks. If you're running like ridges and things like that, those elk will transfer off that ridge once a bunch of boot tracks have been on there. But we were going through easy access country and just going there to harder to get spots, little pockets from us doing our research all summer, and that what you paid for. I figure if I go even myself to learn a new place, it takes me 3 years. The first two are pretty much a scrap. I don't really get to start hunting until the third. Unless your job just allows you to go down there and spend weeks and months and learn all the game trails and being able to mark it all on Onyx. Because when a bull gets to bugling in a spot, all those game trails that I've marked, that's the game changer. When he's cutting a certain elevation, you're like, oh, I know the game trail he's on. And you just, then you can pick him off and play it in your favor. But then thermals, clear different ball game.
Yep, for sure. We in the East have a lot smaller hunting properties from where we're from, New York, upstate New York. But like thermals aren't a thing. Even windage is, you can kind of, property size, you can kind of sneak around a little bit easier. But them thermals, they take things up and down. And if you're not privy to that, and even the time of day, it's just the time of day that you hunt. And if you don't do your research in the morning, the success rate is going to be a lot lower.
Yeah, and it's hard. Honestly, it's hard as a guide. Like, I would have to, like, stop every hour and have a 15-minute discussion of, like, why we're doing. Because I've ruined so much stuff over the years that you just, you lay out certain timing. Like, I need to be at this point. So we can run, like, we would drop on elk, and then we would try to wait till later. That way, we got 2 to 3 hours to play with them. And then thermals would change, and we could completely change our tactic and come in from a different location. Like, I'm sure that we sound, because I'm using the same mouth call a lot. I swap back and forth, but we change our attack, like our angle. And it sometimes is the difference maker of firing them back up, or just they'll just walk away.
So comparison from last time to this time?
Yep.
None of that happened.
You're last dying time. To like talk I, about this.
Your well, shit just, show last time. Well, it was bad.
So go on. Tell us about your the first experience.
It was terrible. He had two different guides. One guide was out scouting for the other place he worked, I think, because he was just filling in. If at most, I would give him credit for that, but that would be a lot. And then his calling was terrible. Like, yeah, I'm a whitetail guy, and I don't know exactly everything about elk, especially on my first trip. So then I got sent with the second guy. I kind of had to tell the guide what to do. We get this bull coming down the mountain, and he leaves, goes 200 yards behind me and calls. And if you're challenging something, you don't run away from it to draw it in, because it wants you to come to it,
yeah,
at least in my mind. And so he was an older fella, and when I said, well, we got to go up the mountain to get him, he said, I can't make the climb. That was my second why am I here moment.
It's hard to pay money if you can out hunt the person that you paid money to be with.
Yeah, that was not good. Not good.
There's really good outfitters out there, but the ones that spoil it for people, it was checkbox on everything. Overbooked.
14 to 16 people in camp, and the very first guide I had that I was only with for 2 days because it was that bad was competing outfitters' top guide, supposedly.
And this is our transition year, so we didn't own the business yet, but we had to deal with all of the aftermath of it. So 16 clients in camp for archery camp, which it was ridiculous, because there's no way you can say that you're going to have a 50% chance at an elk whenever you have 16 people in camp. Not enough guides for all of those people.
At least 8 quality guides.
How many quality guides were in
here? I got brought back on Tuesday in the middle of the day because the guide had errands to run and said the elk don't do anything during the day. I didn't pay to hang out at the lodge. I paid to hang out in the woods. The first day he left us in the woods, he took us to tree stands and disappeared for 3 hours. And while he was gone, apparently he was posting a shed that we found on Facebook. So I don't know what he was doing in the middle of the day, but we weren't looking for elk. I would say, from what I know now and versus what I knew then, I would say there's maybe 3 good guides. 2 of them I know for sure. One of them's Josh. And the other one's Jimmy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
he's still working.
He's still here, right?
Yep.
There's nobody else around and that was here before. Nobody came back with anything either to talk about that was... They weren't excited. They were like, oh, geez, you know, I did this today or I did that today. Not many people had a good response daily. So I came out with 3 other guys, so there's 4 of us. I would have left on Wednesday if I could have rented a car. I was that upset, right? The other 3 guys said they would never come back out here and do this because of the time they had. And so the whole time, I knew you guys were taking kind of the reins and doing your own thing. So I followed all your stuff. And I told the one guy that I was coming back, and he's like, good luck. Hope you enjoy it. He went 63 miles and never once drew his bow back last time he was here. And he only seen 3 elk. He didn't have a very good time.
Yeah, especially when you're in what everyone believes is the heart of the rut, because it was, what, the second week.
That's when we were told to sign up. It was the best.
Because they're describing it, because they played into selling it to you like a whitetail rut. because you could comprehend that. Mm-hmm. So they sold you on a week because they needed to put people in that week. It's serious. It's a vicious.
We signed up at the show.
Even though, so the past 2 weeks, week three and week four, we haven't killed any elk. But everyone in camp has had some sort of experience with bugling, something that gets them addicted to it. And they know that we aren't full of crap at the shows when we're trying to, like, put the right people in the right weeks and then pair them up with the right guides. It's been working out because I think that we are still at 80% honest opportunity.
So I've had those bad weeks where I did 60-some miles and seen two elk, and it's been awful, but...
But not only that, when he came out, there was also eight guides. Some of them never went archery hunting ever. They would sit and listen to where the better guides were hunting. And then it didn't matter where you wanted to hunt. If you would write in the book first, that was your spot the next day. So they would go there and then they would blow it out.
Yeah.
And it was just continuing to be like that. So then there were secrets and clients were put into like a dramatic situation where you can't mention where you just were. And it was...
Oh, yeah.
I like it. It was crazy. But it's taken us 4 years to get the team we got between firing people and hiring new people and everything. But it took us that long to get a team that all works together. They're all very confident in hunting. So they're like, well, if you go there, that's fine. I'll just go over here. Just don't blow them out. And they don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you're sitting at dinner and no one is sharing any stories because everybody's in competition with each other, the outfit's not hunting as a team. They're not going to put you on.
It's not funny.
No.
No, it's not fun. All the drama.
At my first experience here, I didn't notice any drama in the lodge at all. I thought everybody was very welcoming. Everybody was sharing stories of years past and of recent and the day before and so on and so forth. I thought the lodge experience was hands down 5.
Yep, it's true.
5 out of 5.
Yeah, 5 out of 5. Yeah, you guys.
I was good with 5 out of 10.
No, the lodge is great.
Thank you.
We have another client in camp that was telling me about a couple horror stories from an outfit he hunted with, and it was the same thing: running errands with his guide and sitting at the lodge with three other clients while two clients got the best guides in the outfit and they were killing stuff, but the other ones were dropped off for 4 or 5 hours instead of just sitting in the woods. And that's bear clients, so you should be out in the woods glassing. They don't have a pattern. You know, they just do what they want, the bears do. So it's some of those things that we've always wanted to change, and it's good to hear that we're doing it.
Yep. So I gotta say one thing. When I signed up for this hunt, the whole time until I got here, I didn't know Josh was going to guide us. Not that I would have been upset to go with somebody else, but the day you were like, well, Josh is guiding you, was like a slam dunk. So, and that's not to put pressure on you or anything. I guess maybe a calming thing for me, because I was like, oh, man. The whole way, I listen to the podcast and stuff, so I mean, I know that everybody's successful and everybody's doing good, mm-hmm. but it was just, I think maybe because I was... You were there last time when I was here?
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that guy had his stuff together. He knew what was going on. And that it just was probably more of a comforting thing. So once I found that out, I told Tom, I'm like, we got the best guy in town.
Yeah, I agree with that now that I see after a week of hunting. And
well, and everybody's asking him questions. You stop on the road. You got people stopping to talk to you to see what's going on and tell you things. And you got yourself in a good spot overall business-wise and otherwise, but... This is your business and you're ultimately the guy in charge. Not you get to make decisions on, okay, I want this guide or I don't, this guide's not going to work for me. But with your knowledge and your abilities, that's going to put better guides together to work as a team so that anybody that comes won't have that experience like we've just been talking about. They all think very similarly to you and hunt like you. So it's bound to be successful. It's not...
Yeah, my
car. It's not a up and down and up and down. Oh man, this guy, you know what I mean? Like Cody. He is going to be a phenomenal guide.
My car ride back from one of our hunts, I was with Cody. He thinks highly of you guys and talks great about you, and he's a good apprentice. He's going to make a really good guide here in the future, and he's trying to learn and just in silence. When you're making a decision, he's just sitting there analyzing the why, the where, the how.
He's a sponge.
Yep, he's a sponge. He wants to learn and do good, and he's excited to be back, I think. I mean,
And thank you guys for letting a third wheel be with us, because there was a couple times I was like, I got to do a teaching lesson. You know what I mean? And like,
yeah, but that's great.
Yeah,
we got that. Kids, so we, got, we understand.
Yeah, we got kids. We understand it.
18 months. I mean, he's young. He's very, very intelligent and very patient, and pays a lot more attention at 18 than I did at anything.
We do the apprentices, and they shadow the older guides, and like we did, Colin did Spring Bear, and Cody's doing now, and it allowed, they get to sit back and watch the interaction and the talk and the different weeks of different mentalities and how you need to deal with it. And yeah, it definitely helps them, because everybody, they want to go to these guide schools and be guides, but through, you have to learn an apprenticeship hands-on. And then until you actually been in the woods, whenever it's coming out and it's like, you got to like get through certain areas and explaining it, and then they have to, you got to be there. You
know? Yeah, he helped me with the means and methods of the elk stuff. You know, he's like, time to move forward, get going, you know?
Yeah.
You know, this is not turkey, you're not waiting around, just get down that hill.
Yeah. And the benefit to that is going all the way back to, this is the steps you wanted to take and this is what you want to build. You know, if you can get a 18-year-old kid that wants to do that and you can teach him from the beginning up,
it has to work.
It can't not work.
And if they can go through a whole season, they don't have to pay for a guide school, but they don't get paid. They go through, they shadow, they do the grunt work, really. And then you can see kind of like how their attitude will be, if they would be good with clients, if they're going to give up and that kind of stuff. And that's just an extra layer onto the team, because the previous outfitter here, he had a heck of a team when he first started. I mean, like, that he was very similar to just like this team that we have now, but they didn't put in the effort to continue it. And you know, people grow up, they get married, have a family, and then guiding is a little bit harder and a little harder. So we're trying to like have a team for a long time. You have to put in all that time and effort. And I think a lot of outfitters just get lost in the money part of it. And that's whenever their reputations start to go way down.
I liked the apprentice in the field with you, because you were guiding Ike here and working the bull and managing the wind. And I was kind of in limbo thinking, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know, and that's when Cody was like, this is what you need to do. So having that apprentice on your back shoulder there, helping me, pushing me in the right directions, you know, and you were giving him some subtle cues to what he needed to be doing. And that was very helpful to get us into those close approaches that we needed to be in.
I love having cow parties too. It's nice. I mean, it sounds so good when a couple guys are calling. I mean, it really sounds good. And then someone can rake, and there can still be cows 40, 50 yards away, like natural, instead of the cow calls and the raking coming from the same exact location.
Right. There was a couple times you guys tricked me. Is that a real elk? Is that a real elk? I gotta look out, you know.
As far as like your timing, you're very methodical with your layout, and it proved to work every single time. If somebody just went out there on their own and they knew the thermals and they knew the bedding areas and they knew all the stuff, that's fine. But you still have to be able to put it all together in one big puzzle. And at the same time, you're guiding people through the woods. Not so, you know, I can move faster than he can move, or he can move slower than or faster than somebody else. So you have to put all this together while you're moving through the woods. So as an on the outfitter side, that's a whole nother element you have to control while you're trying to do this elk thing. I didn't find any time at all this week that wasn't spot on.
And trying to put us on animals through all of that.
And not look like a complete absolute idiot because we're doing everything wrong for whitetail
mentality. I got marched up a mountain last time. Just marched. No stop. No, do you need a break? No, nothing.
Middle of the day going up, therm blowing everything out.
It was terrible.
That's the hardest part of guiding. I've did it now for quite a few years, so I can always fall back on like my experience. But a young guy trying to pull that off with someone, it's hard. Like,
absolutely.
So they get impatient and they start pushing and moving faster than they should through country. So yeah, it's a big guy game. It's fun though. Maybe they're not near as clever as I think they are. Maybe it's just me from hunting them all the time. I like to come up with these wild scenarios, but most of the good elk hunters I know, they think the same way. I mean, and they really dive into like setting up these scenarios. Best case scenario, you go down there and you glass them up and you kind of like strategically set up. You're like, all right, they're right there, 100 yards. And once you drop a certain distance and the elk are quiet, that bull's still going to, he's got to come up and protect his cows one way or the other. And it'll just start from there. And then you roll with the punches. that was not best case scenario that you blow them up and they bail out of there. What does work for elk hunting is in a natural stance that a bull would go down those ridges and he would find those little pockets of cows, and he's using his nose the same as we were winding those elk above them little alder patch, and he's going to drop down in there, and they don't want harassed. They don't even like the bull that's with them. They want that, they could care less, but once they're bred, he's going to go away. So when he goes down in there, you got to think that they're laying there chewing their cud, and he goes down and rakes them out of their bed with his antlers, and he's sniffing a little of this and then running that one around. So they don't want him there. So when a new one comes down, they're like, oh God, not again. So they run off. And a lot of times that'll trigger an instant bugle, and then the game is on. But there was no bull with them.
No, and I think there's four or five cows that ran out of there.
I know. I could see the look on your face when I turned around, and you're like, did you guys jump elk? I'm like, yeah, we busted them up. I could see the look on your face.
He even said, he goes, what? We're just blowing cows out of here. What are we doing? It was funny. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you got to separate them.
Yeah, that's completely
I tried to explain it to him, like the fall turkey hunting. He was like, no, I don't get it.
Yeah, because these have noses. At least turkeys, you know, they don't have noses. So you're just working on visual.
And the bull not being in there worked out greatly to our favor, because he had went to go check on another group of elk and had left it, and then we were stuck in the middle, and then the bugling started.
Yep, that's when the Jurassic Park started.
Yeah, I told you it sounded like Jurassic Park. That's when right. It goes.
Yeah.
And even though it's cool when we got so close, you get close like that so much, and it's just the...
But then we get surrounded. There's three bulls around us. There's cows everywhere.
Those bulls, they thought that I had stole one of their cows, and I had her locked up there, and I acted like I was running her around. And every time I would start going wild with the cow and like estrus running, their bulls would go nuts. I loved on that. But my legs would cramp up from running through them blowdowns, because you got to pick the thickest blowdown so it sounds real noisy.
Noise, yeah.
How weird is that, popping brush and being loud walking?
Oh, yeah, that's completely different than whitetail.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, walking by breaking sticks off. You're like, oh, yeah, my goodness.
Raking trees, and I'm thinking, this is going to work? It doesn't make any sense.
Sneaking up on them. Like, I tried to... My idea of sneaking up was still whitetail, so I'm trying to step real soft, and then I would slip, and I'd knock a rock loose, and I'd be like, oh, man, I'm too loud. And then I heard the first elk run across rocks, and I was like... Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, or they blow up when you do that. You make noise and they just start screaming at you.
Yeah, the elk, they lose track of all the elk that are around him. I mean, he tries to keep in good order of them, but that's why they're always working above during those thermals. So he can just work back and forth above them cows, making sure they're still there and haven't moved, and all of them are there. So when you start making noise, he doesn't know exactly what elk that is, and you can slip into a whole elk herd just being way noisier than what you think, way more than what a whitetail. They won't allow you to do anything a whitetail.
That's right. I think that might have led to the lack of success this week from, you know, the harvesting of the animal. I had a lot of my reservations with noise.
Yeah.
I could have attacked those, that first bull that we were on. Probably could have went a little bit further and faster on him. But you have this thought process that I need to be quiet and I got to get... you know, sneak around so much. But I think if we would have attacked him a little bit faster without that whitetail stuff in the back of your head just triggering you, we might have had him.
Different outcome.
Different outcome on that particular situation.
30 yards is make it or break it in elk hunting.
Yeah.
And them little vegetation breaks, doesn't matter. We had them completely hook, line, and sinker, but they still won't break a lot of that. They want to be able to see something. And you have to set those calling setups where they can't see into it. So they always like want to just poke around the edges of it. So that's when you have to like, I always like to describe it as wrestling. You know what I mean? Jostling for an upper hand or a body positioning or something like that. Because it is just a constant moving. And everybody explains it as just powing up against a tree and calling them in.
And that's where it's different for turkey hunting.
Yeah.
Because you can't move when you're hunting turkeys.
That's right.
Yep.
But you have to get around on them. So whoever's calling them and they're paying attention to that, you can get around to get a shot.
Right, and that goes back to the noise thing. When you're hunting turkeys, you can't make a whole bunch of noise either because they'll spook off. And there's so many eyes looking at you, but you got those cows scattered, and then you got that bull screaming, and you got that turkey hunting in the back of your head, and you're saying, I got to be quiet.
Yeah, everything's similar, but it's not the same.
And so, yeah, it's not like that at all. You got to be aggressive, and you can be louder.
Yeah, louder. Yeah, that's
not too loud, but louder.
Yeah. So then the one day we didn't have a very good. What was the bad day?
Well, you had a bad day.
Oh, yeah.
We had good days.
Yeah.
You beat yourself up.
Well,
we went to another place, and we went a different way than you've ever went there before.
Yeah.
And it was, we struck out as far as elk, but the sign going in that way showed you that what was there was...
It was the way to go.
You're harder on yourself, though, because you're trying to produce for the hunter.
Yeah,
so for the Eastern
Cowboy. Your outcome of the bad day wasn't the same for us, because we got to see some gnarly sign. Big sign.
Well, yeah, we got to learn strategy. I mean, yeah, even that.
Absolutely.
That
I try to break it down and show in the mapping of it and things like that. That I don't know. Does that help much?
We
say it does because it's hard for a quarterback to, like, without huddling up, it's hard for the team to know the play. And
it's a good analogy.
Josh isn't the only one that all of our guides go over the game plan and try and make their clients better because they have a rebook bonus so that their clients want to come back and hunt with them. I hear from a lot of guides and other outfitters. We talk to a lot of them, and they think what we do is counterproductive as far as teaching our clients how to elk hunt.
I guarantee you that's dead wrong, and I don't care how good of a hunter you are, you can't just show up out here and do it yourself.
Yeah, because they're like, why would you teach them that? Or with Onyx, they're going to pinpoint, and then they're going to go and steal your spot or do it themselves, and it's like,
I
doubt it, you know?
I try to teach you as much knowledge as I can, what the elk are eating, why they're bedding there, exactly, because if you do go elk hunting somewhere, the person that's also elk hunting that area will greatly appreciate it, you knowing all these things, so you're not blowing all the elk out of. That's what I kept bragging about all week, was that we could hunt the same areas overlapping on my guides and help each other out. Mm-hmm. And the elk were like, they weren't pressured.
Right.
And yeah, that's because everybody knows how to elk hunt. So if we let everybody be dumb about it or naive about how to do it, they're not going to go DIY. Our success rates will go way up. We'll kill more elk. We'll hunt together as a unit instead of us trying to act like know-it-alls. And how stupid would it be for me to not to tell you everything I know? And then now this is your second time hunting with us. I'm sure we'll get to hunt again together. Why would I want you to,
signed up?
Yeah, you know, perfect. So then why would I want you to have the same rookie mistakes the third year as it did the first? And then we don't have any dead elk. That's why there's a 4% kill ratio.
Your experience being here for the second time, did it help you to be prepared? Because, like, you
Yeah, absolutely.
You already knew mentally what you were about to do.
Yeah, the physicality part of it, I didn't question at all. The gear part of it, I was a little nervous about still, because I had totally different gear, because last time I didn't have the right gear. So I switched and got what I figured would work the best. And I talked to Josh back and forth a bunch of times, mm-hmm, about broadheads and backpacks and footwear and clothing and all that, and everything he gave me as a suggestion was great. I just didn't know what layers to wear when and how, and actually I just gauged myself off of him. Once I figured out that I could control my body temperature similarly to what he was wearing,
yeah,
I just asked him, hey, you gonna throw a vest on or not? And he'd say yes or no, then I knew what I needed to do.
Yeah, I caught on to that late in the game.
Yeah, so you were your coat for like 3 days, and we were all trying to figure out how you were still alive.
Yeah. For sure. I overworked myself in that regard. I should have had my coat off sooner and just played my body temperature off of your guys'.
And the other thing that was a benefit to me, I think, that the physical exertion that you put in and the length of time you have to hunt because of the hours of light, you may get 5 hours of sleep a night. And if that's not something you're used to, you better start figuring that out before you come here, because it's really not an option. 5 or 6 hours is the max you're really going to get if you're hunting good and you're into animals, and you have to be up early and get out in the woods early, and you have to stay late. I think that's something that, as a whitetail hunter or any hunter, especially back where we are, that's not something that comes into play. The days are longer here,
for sure,
by far, than where we are on the East Coast, and it's
our tracks in are a lot shorter. That's the other piece. Like, your track in, you could, depends on what time you want to start your day. If you're going to glass, you're going to start a little bit later during this elk season. But you're talking about 2-3 hour walk out sometimes, which you're not used to that in whitetail. Whitetail, you might do an all day sit. You go in an hour before and you're out an hour after, and you only had that walk, you know, a mile total.
Yeah.
So that's understanding the mindset.
It was 2.5-3 miles out pretty much every night once you hit the bob.
And I would keep us there until the bitter end, though. And we're getting into elk in that last bit almost every
day. We sit late anyway.
We sit late during whitetail.
So we're used to that.
We're used to that piece, but
The sleep side of it, though, is the part where...
The trek out and then how it impacts your sleep is...
And I'm not saying that as a negative. Like, I don't want you to change anything. Not that you would, but... Like, that was just... That's something on the whole other end of it that I think people would... By Wednesday or Thursday, if you're not somebody that's good with short sleep, you're going to have a hard time because you're going to be sore and you're going to be tired. If things aren't going, you know, exactly how you thought they were going to go, you're already mentally going to be behind. I talked about this with Josh a little on the trail. Like, I can see where people fold by Wednesday. You have to mentally be prepared to take what comes, period. It doesn't matter if it's weather, you're tired and your body hurts. You have to just get over it and keep going, or you got no chance of killing an elk. It's just not going to happen. And those are all the little aspects, I think, that add up that I was fine with this time because I'd known, and I tried to tell Tom, like I said before, you can tell somebody until you experience it. It's a whole different animal.
Yeah, return clients do a lot better. They already know what's coming. You know what you're getting yourself into. And I think we can touch on this. We have you two as a two-on-one this week, and then we have another client in here as a one-on-one, and you guys are the only ones archery elk hunting. You guys had a lot of good days. How many out of six?
It depends. They were all good days.
All good days.
I mean, well, action.
We had 2 days where if we had a little bit more experience and a little less holdback from what we're used to, probably would have both killed elk easily. Absolutely. I think.
I agree.
The first spot we went, we should have been a little bit more aggressive and we would have been fine.
I got demoralized the one day I was like sick to my stomach that we didn't hear any bugling, because I was already thinking you had a bad experience and we just did a hunt where we should have been covered up with elk and we never heard a peep. And I was...
You could tell, though. You could tell on your face that you were bummed. Yeah. Hard.
That day, the rubs on the trees were enormous. I mean,
the trees were enormous. They were rubbed on.
The trees are enormous. The rub size and the heights
18, were... 20 inch diameter trees getting tore up.
Yeah. Higher than I could reach with a bugle tube.
Right. Yeah. I had to take a picture. I set my bow next to the tree just to get a judgment. I got to actually send you that because it's unbelievable. And there was like five trees, maybe more, just like that, 20 inches in diameter and bigger, and just tore up. So we knew we were in the right spot. There's no doubt about that.
He was just a ridge over. We found that out. Yeah,
we left screaming, "Hey, you idiots are on the other side of the hill.
Come and get me.
Yes. As hunters, we know. I mean, we've got our own property in our own woods, and we might hunt whitetail, but there's days where we go out there and we sit all day and don't see anything. Yeah. That's just part of the game. That doesn't change from elk to deer.
It's hunting. I remember you said the one time it would be like you trying to take me and put me on a 180 whitetail in 6 days. You know what I mean? That would be difficult.
Hard to do, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you guys had 4 out of 6 days with action or sign. The other client in camp has been back very early every day, and he hasn't gotten close to the action. You guys, he loves it here, and he's a good client. It's just he was underprepared for this hunt, and he's been back early before dark. You guys have gotten in at 9:30, 10 o'clock, sometimes 10:30 at night. Wake up for breakfast at 5. He's just not willing to do that this week in his hunt, and I'm sure that has cost him a lot of action packed days. I think that's the hardest thing, is when their client needs a break day, they need to sleep in, or they need to come out early. The guides really, they feel guilty because these hunts are expensive. We want everyone to be successful on the hunt. You know, whenever a client's like, "Oh man, I'm going to take a break day tomorrow, or I'm going to come back early because I'm pretty whooped," or something like that. At the end of the day, it's the client's hunt, and we have to make them feel comfortable and make it memorable for them. And they can't always be memorable whenever you're suffering through. So sometimes on a Wednesday or Thursday, clients need a break day, but we feel responsible for that because we want them to get the full 6 days, the full experience, and we try to prepare the clients as much as possible.
As a guide, I think they are responsible for that. Like, I would hold myself responsible, because if I did something really dumb on Monday and like pulled a hard hunt with a low percentage of kill at the end of it, that would be dumb of me. I would have shot ourselves in the foot for the rest of the week. You know what I mean? That's why you test the water, and then you do a really good day, and then you do a medium day, and you kind of like string it out. That way I can get you guys to hunt the whole week. Because if not, it doesn't do me any good to hunt you 2 days.
Yeah, you feel like you might be burning us out.
Yeah. Honestly, and that's a fine line.
So you failed this week since your clients are here on Saturday recording a podcast with us?
I guess.
No, I wouldn't say it was a fail at all. to go back to what you just said though, Josh's management allowed to stop for breaks regularly. And yeah, my body hurt. I knew that was going to happen. My feet hurt up. It didn't prevent me from going hunting any day. Well, then all the one day we switched up and we did a drop instead of climbing up and around. Just as a break, you know what I mean? To let us recoup from the couple days prior. I get what you're saying. Why you feel
you
like
did all your timing correctly too, and gave us enough time at our stops to get the energy we needed back up to make the next trip.
I don't know how, as a guide though, you'd be able to gauge that right out of the gate on Monday. I mean, I'm sure there's ways that you've learned over time, but when somebody shows up and says, "Oh yeah, I did this, and that, and I can do this, and I can do that, and I can shoot 70 yards and." That's all fine and good, but you don't know their mental ability as far as overriding pain or thinking through adversity or whatever. You know, there was times last time I was here that climbing, I was gassed, and I was like, how am I ever going to pull a bow back? I can't even see straight right now trying to breathe. I never had that point this time. So there's things like that, you know, some people are, everybody's different.
Yeah, it's dumb for me to hell hike you up a hill and then walk right into an elk.
Yeah. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. You only get so many opportunities, and if you let a give me pass you by, man, that's the worst as a guide. You got to kill all those give me's, or at least have an opportunity at them without blowing it. And that's how I kind of judge my years. If it's a good year, bad year, if I'm ruining all those give me's, then I need to change something as a guide that I'm doing wrong.
You know, I was surprised we didn't, the whole time we were here and all the miles we trekked, we didn't blow out one elk that we didn't want to blow out on purpose. I thought that was crazy.
Yep.
We're walking through virgin country. I'm thinking, we got to be pushing these things all over these woods.
The first 2 days, he was beside himself about why we were walking all this distance.
Why are we walking all this distance? We're not even checking this ground.
We walked all the way up here to sit here for an hour and a half. The hour and a half was built in case we couldn't get there that fast.
It was. So it was
a nap time.
It was fun.
Yeah, it's a cool game. Once you start to figure it out, it even becomes a lot neater because there's so many moving parts to it. And then you can involve gear, and that makes it real fun.
Oh yeah,
nerd out on your gear, and then you can spend all your money on trekking poles and backpacks and spotting scopes. And
for clients that are coming out with any outfitter, I would start preparing, but you have 6 days to make this hunt work.
And I think that's where some of our success came in. So Josh sat there and did all the preparation on, you know, set up in the morning, getting us to location, that allowed us for a successful evenings. I think if you're trying to do it all in the morning and trying to, you know, be home by 8, I don't think that's going to work. And that goes back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier with whitetail hunting. You know, you get out there 6 a.m. just 45 minutes before daybreak, and then you're home by 8 o'clock. I mean, that's just a standard deer season, but this is different. You got to get back to this locations, and you got to hunt all day. For our hunt yesterday, it was like, it was right between 6 and 8 o'clock. We're pushing it.
It's a window. It's a window. Sometimes it's a little bigger, sometimes it's not.
And all of our conditions were stressful too, with the wind and the rain and the, you know, downward trek.
Yesterday was rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the days whenever they just come at you like that. I hate whenever they're like picture perfect, the elk are bugling, you roll up to the spot and you're like sitting there and my stomach is in knots. I'm like, oh, I hope this works out. I like when you just get down in there and it just happens and then you just shoot from the hip. It seems to work out better, I think, honestly.
Yesterday was awesome, and that was my favorite day.
Yeah, it was good.
And it was most challenging.
Yep, that's a challenging mountain.
Well, we had the weather too. That added another level of it at the end.
Yeah, 40 mile an hour wind gusts. That's serious. I mean, yeah. At 6,000 feet. It was probably more than that. It was probably more like 60 at some times.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gusts were definitely high. I wasn't nervous though. I was more interested to know if we were going to end up having to wait the storm out and then go down in the dark, because I was like, oh man, we made all this all day long to get over here.
I didn't want to do another nature hike in this mountain.
It worked out great though. It all worked out.
It turned out to be a great night. I mean, made 3 hours of elk hunting, running down the hill, chasing these things, getting soaking wet.
Flat out, running at them, bugling the drum in.
Right.
Oh, he was fired up, man. He kept making swings at us to protect his cows and boiling back over us. And we say all this of running and chasing, and what was that bull doing when it was dark? He came back into us.
That's right.
And we had to wait and then sneak away and turn headlights on.
The spike was the problem, I think, in the meantime.
Yeah,
He foiled it 3 times.
Yeah, the dadgum spikes again. That bull would have been dead to rights. He was under 40 yards, but a spike in the way. You could have touched.
I could have touched him with my arm. And I blinked and he turned and burned.
Yeah, we were fortunate. We found a bunch of bulls in there.
That was a great place.
It was a sweet hunt.
It was a good glassing session in the morning to pinpoint where we wanted to be.
And there's very few places that you can hunt like that around here successfully. It's hard to glass. There's only little pockets of places, and you got to like get perched back in there. But if you can glass them up before it starts, it makes walking through hell a lot easier.
Well, it makes it more rewarding because we could have walked through hell not seeing anything. Yeah. And then, you know, you get down in there and there's nothing there. That makes it a little bit disheartening when you walk 6 or 8 miles.
Yeah.
That goes back to somebody before they ever come here, though.
Yeah.
So if you think you're in good shape,
you're not in good shape.
You need to be twice as good as you think you are.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
These mountains
will tear you up.
That'll tear you up for sure.
Yeah. It's just how long.
When we're running downhill, you're running on stones, rock slides, through the brush, through timbers, whatever's there. You're just dropping as fast as you can get there. So it's all kind of wound in together, and it challenges you.
It's intense, isn't
it? It's fun.
He goes, I am hooked on elk hunting.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I'm addicted. The bottom of that's gnarly.
It keeps everybody out of there.
Yeah. It's awful. When the other guys knew we were going, their response was, oh, good luck.
Yeah. I think I learned something about you on this trip. When you mean game trail, you mean a deer passed through there one time. Not a herd. Maybe even a raccoon passed through there. So now it's a game trail.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm getting slapped in the face with sticks, and I'm like, I got cuts on my face thinking, I thought he said there was a game trail around here somewhere.
Actually, must I think be talking he said about maybe squirrels. We should walk through the creek. It'd be easier at one point.
We got through.
We got out of
it. It's all part of it. Good times. Well, you guys are going to head out. Do you got any final thoughts you want to maybe touch on? Or
anybody that's coming out here should look at your website. For sure.
On gear?
Yeah. Oh, gear. Gear is huge.
Yeah. You kept going over that.
How impressed I was with the Kuyu gear. If you don't have the right gear, you're going to fail. Especially when you start marching up these hills and down these hills. If you don't have the vented gear where you vent yourself, you're going to overdress, and then you're going to overheat, and then you're going to consume more water,
and then you're going to get cold.
It's just, you got to have
layers,
you know, wool too. You got to have everything that wicks off. You can't have like nylon undergarments. You got to be able to breathe, and you got to be able to layer, and you're going to have to layer on and layer off more than you actually think.
Yep.
That's different from whitetail, where you just go bundle up and sit in a tree stand.
Last time I came out with a Dick's Sporting Goods style hiking bag, you know, I was hunting hiking pack. Mm-hmm. I think it was twice as heavy as my Stone Glacier one that I bought this time. The Stone Glacier one, I can't compare it to anything else because that's the only one I've had, is great. Functionally, it was rugged, strong. I had the same Kuyu gear. Boots, though. Feet. Like, I have soft feet. I know I have soft feet.
Yes, I drive a truck.
I wear sneakers.
Yeah.
But that's the... I think... I didn't have blisters or anything. My feet were just sore from...
Yeah. Climbing
side hill. All the rock stuff.
The right
side. With a harder sole. I mean, you gotta... Just gotta get conditioned to the harder sole.
Did you go to the two socks and stay with that the rest of the week?
I did go to the two socks and stay with it the rest of the week, and it made a world of difference.
You said that the military made you do that.
Yeah, you had to wear a nylon sock inside of, I think it was a nylon sock inside of a wool sock, because that's what pulled the water out, and then the wool wicked it out. Yep. It was good. It made a huge difference.
I would also recommend a bow carrier. I know Ike carried his bow the whole time, and that added a whole nother level of complexity. I was like thinking to myself,
that's
man,
I'm paranoid I'm about glad that.
You are...
I need to be ready, man. I've been busted by whitetails before. I'm not.
You definitely did more work with your arms than I did during the whole week, which, you know, I give you a testament to that. That's hard work up and down those hills and the miles we put on. I'm glad I had my Kuyu bow carrier, to be honest with you. It definitely helped in the nighttime descends, for sure.
So I came with a sling-style bow carrier last time. By the time I got that stupid thing out and got an arrow knock and was ready, I would have been out to lunch. Yesterday especially. There's no way I would have had time to get all that stuff. I don't know. I get nervous.
For the descent, it was good to just be able to one clip, take the bow out.
On the way back in the dark, though, I definitely was jealous of the fact that I was carrying it where you were.
Well,
yeah.
I appreciate it, guys.
We appreciate your time here.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody listening, I hope you got some good intel for this, and hopefully we got some more good stories. A lot of bear hunters next week. All right, over and out.